for visiting HawkeyeDrive.com, your stop for Iowa football, men's basketball content, and welcome to our final, 17th and final edition this season of the Talking Hawks podcast here on HawkeyeDrive.com. I'm Brendan Stiles, and I'm happy to say that I am rejoined this week by my co-host, former Iowa defensive back Chris Rao. Chris, it's been a little while here. How you been, man?
I've been pretty good here. Had a couple weeks out, you know, sitting here just trying to get some things together, just trying to regroup.
Apparently. Well, I'm glad to have you back here for this one, especially considering it's our last one of the season here, and you mentioned it's bowl season, and that's pretty much what the heavy topic of conversation is going to be here. Since our last recording, which was before the championship weekend here, it got announced that Iowa is in the Outback Bowl, which I feel is a game they deserve to be in after beating Michigan and Nebraska like they did to end the season at 8-4. And they're going to be taking on LSU. Now, what I find interesting here is, and this is something I know we kind of talked about, on the side here a little while back, but when I think back to that weekend and the Sunday when the announcements were being made, I was under the impression that Texas A&M was going to be the Outback Bowl's pick on the SEC side. I didn't think there was any doubt in Iowa going there for the Big Ten as long as they got two BCS teams, which they did once Michigan State beat Ohio State in the championship game. But the feeling I had was that Texas A&M was going to end up in that game because you factor in the fact that it's New Year's Day, it's a game on ESPN, you have Johnny Manziel, you have a way of getting the TV market there, if you will, and the things that bowls look for having, you know, somebody that will bring in ratings and then a team that's going to bring the fans. And you know why I was going to bring fans down to Tampa, as evident by the ticket sales here over the past week and a half. But I had a feeling it was going to be A&M. And when I saw that the Chick-fil-A Bowl initially wanted Georgia-Miami, that's what I had a feeling was going to happen, because it sounded to me like the only way they were going to take Georgia was to avoid having LSU there 2 years in a row in Atlanta. But then something happened. The ACC commissioner jumped in, said he wanted Duke in that game. The Chick-fil-A Bowl obliged, and then they went for Texas A&M instead, which basically led to the Outback Bowl then being able to take LSU, which it did. And I'm curious to get your take here on this matchup when you see that the Hawkeyes are going to be taking on an LSU team that I know you and I have talked about a few times here when we discuss games on the Pick'em, but not necessarily the same LSU team you've seen in recent years, but still a pretty good one that the Hawkeyes are going to be facing in Tampa.
I think with this LSU team here, the Hawks playing this year, is a very similar team to who they are this year. They're not the most talented team, you know, LSU has had, and it's a pretty quiet team that's, you know, for the most part, will probably be a tremendous team next year, you know, competing in the SEC in their conference. With the Hawks, they got better throughout the season. It's just one of those deals where LSU has been one of those middle-of-the-road teams, you know, being overlooked by Alabama and Auburn and the Missouris of the world and so forth. With the Hawks, you know, with the past couple weeks, you know, you just have them just turning it on. When they beat Michigan handily, and then they sat there and beat Nebraska handily, and just, you sit there and say, wow, this team has really turned for the best. And I know one thing we talked about all scenes is just, you know, looking at the losses that the Hawks had this year, I think it was a combined 4 or 5 losses total.
Right.
So that says a lot. That says a lot.
Right, and you know, it's interesting you bring that up. The fact that Iowa, the 4 games that they lost this season have all come to pretty good teams. I mean, Michigan State and Ohio State are both in BCS games. They met in the Big Ten Championship. Northern Illinois looked like a team that was going to be in a BCS game for the second year in a row before they lost the MAC title game. And then Wisconsin looked like they might be in a position to maybe steal an at-large before they lost their last game of the season to Penn State. So, yeah, I think this is one of those games where maybe when you look back on it at the end, depending on how the outcome goes, you can make a case that this either ends up being like the weakest loss, if you will, for Iowa, just considering who the other games they've beaten, the teams they've lost to, or it might end up being their best victory, because I would say that LSU's probably better, at least on paper in terms of what they have in talent. LSU's probably a better team than any of the teams that Iowa's beaten to this point this season.
Yeah, and I'll actually add on to this is that, like you said, if Iowa wins this game, just like I read in the papers and off the internet quite a bit, that Coach Ferentz actually compared this team to 2018, mm-hmm. which was my junior year going back into the Hawks team, where you've seen a lot of similarities, where, of course, they had a run game, the defense had really stepped up towards the end of the season and so forth. You know, I'm not going to go too much into it, but I actually see it also. You know, when you look at that, you have a very experienced offensive line team throughout the season. You know, you have a quarterback that's in his junior year, where you have Rick, the same thing. So it's a lot of similarities, you know, with the offense and the defense and the team just overall that can possibly go into a pretty good season next year, you know, with a lot of veterans. And also, you still lose quite a bit of guys as well.
Right. And you know, that's a parallel that I know I've touched on as well, because I've noticed it too. I'm not going to sit here and say that Michigan is as good as that Penn State team you guys beat in 2008, but that seems like a pretty comparable win, because the fact that they came back in the second half like they did and won that game, and in the fashion that they did, I think really said something about the team, because that was to me was the first real eye-opening win that they got. And then to be able to carry that momentum into Lincoln like they did against Nebraska, and then it wasn't 55-0 like you did to Minnesota, but it was quite a beatdown that they laid on. It reached a point in that game where there was no doubt Iowa was going to win. It was just a matter of, was Nebraska going to make it close, and it ended up being a 3-touchdown game. You mentioned being in the Outback Bowl your junior year, and I know this is a game that you appeared in twice, because you were also in it this season. You redshirted when you guys played Florida. And the question I have for you here is, do you see any challenges for the coaching staff as far as keeping the players grounded, if you will, while they're down in Tampa? And I guess what I'm getting at here is you consider that they weren't in a bowl game a year ago. And for most of these guys, the only bowl game that they've been to is the Insight. I mean, some of the fifth-year seniors are in the Orange Bowl with you, but most of these guys went to the Insight Bowl, which is a nice bowl, and they do a good job of running it, but you don't have all the activities on the side like you do with a game like the Outback. And I know you played in it. I've covered it before. And there's a lot that they have going on in Tampa that week, whether it be inviting the teams to NHL, to Tampa Bay Lightning game, or having them go to this arcade and having like a bowling night sort of thing, going to Busch Gardens, having a beach day. As a player, where do you draw the line as far as being able to have fun, since you view it as a reward, versus, you know, remembering why you're down there in the first place?
I think it's pretty interesting. It's one of those deals where you actually just look at things and see the achievements that you have done throughout the school year. You know, just to be able to sit there and say, hey, I'm on my school break. You know, it's time to have some fun, but at the same time, just like, you know, it's a business trip. And with this team, just like the team that I was on my junior year, we came off a year where we didn't go to a bowl game. And with these guys, just like you say, it's just one of those deals that some of the older guys, some of the seniors, juniors, some of the guys that actually play won't really stay at the beach day, which Coach Ferentz encourages all to actually go to the beach day. But at the same time, he gives us the option of actually staying there, you know, to a certain amount of time, you know, whether it's 30 minutes to an hour or the whole time, in which he tells the redshirt freshmen and the younger guys that actually don't play, they're welcome to stay as long as they want to. But at the same time, the guys that are actually want to play, if you're going to stay there for a short amount of time and stay out of the actual sun and so forth, but then you got another crew that actually goes there, wave, say hello to the fans, and then you actually go ahead back on those buses with Coach Ferentz and, you know, go up on yourself and go back to the hotel and just kick back and relax and watch some games. That's actually possible. actually been played at the same time.
So my follow-up for you then specifically, because as I mentioned, you were a part of two of these, and one of them was at a time when you were a guy that was redshirting and another time when you were upperclassman. Did you end up doing it differently, whereas, like, say, the first time you went there, you took in all of those activities, like you said a lot of the younger guys do, and then the more recent time, your junior year, you just kind of made it more about football?
Well, my freshman year, I wasn't so much into jumping in Clearwater Lake or whatever it is it's called. I wasn't so much into that, so I just got back on the bus and went back and kicked back and just, you know, watched quite a bit of football and played in an arcade with a couple of teammates. But my junior year, it was one of those years where I took Coach Barron's advice of going back to the hotels after that first trip. I stayed for about a couple minutes, ate with a couple guys, and, you know, played around for a little bit and just went on and remembered that it was a business trip. So I think with some of the guys, it's just one of those deals to be able to relish it, you know, regardless if you're a senior or a freshman or whatnot, you know, get back to the hotels to be able to kick back and enjoy your time, you know, while you actually have when it comes to these when you come to the environment, which for that most part, once it's a beach day, is for the most part the fans are there. Mm-hmm. For the most part, they're pretty much settled in. But then again, like you say, with the arcade days, that's one of the days Coach Barron's actually tell us all just to continue to just have fun. Everybody goes to the arcade because it's not too much joy. You're just sitting bouncing around or anything. Right. You're just sitting down, stationed. Regardless if it's a go-kart game or a game, you're just sitting there and just arm wrestling or something like that and so forth. But it's just one of those deals he tell us to just go have fun as a team out and with another team. You know, my year was South Carolina, my junior year, in which I had a lot of fun playing against, you know, a couple other guys. And I know one of the guys I still have a good relationship who actually is on South Carolina's coaching staff now. So it's just one of those you'd be able to mingle with some of the guys on the other team also.
Now, as far as the actual game itself goes with Iowa taking on LSU, obviously the big storyline here is LSU is going to be without its quarterback, Zach Mettenberger, who, for those who have listened to this podcast regularly, he's a guy that you and I have discussed quite a bit as far as any time we've discussed LSU games. He got hurt against Arkansas on his senior day, unfortunately for him. Injured his knee. It required surgery the following week, so he's not going. And now they got a true freshman named Anthony Jennings. He came back, he threw the game-winning touchdown against Arkansas to win that game on Black Friday. But now he's the starting quarterback. And while he has a month to prepare here with the bowl, he has a month of preparation, this is also going to be his first career start. And this is really his first audition as the guy. Now, knowing this, how do you feel this alters what Iowa wants to do? Because I would imagine it's difficult knowing that you don't really have a whole lot of game film to go off of in preparing for a guy like this.
I think it's very interesting, just like you say. This guy only really probably has, you know, a handful of plays or so, you know, under his belt. And, you know, with the Hawks, they possibly have to go back to some high school stuff, try to figure out what type of quarterback he was when he was in high school. But at the same time, we have guys on the team that's a possibility to be able to sit there. It looks like he's a dual threat guy, so you'll probably have maybe a quarterback or possible a receiver or a running back to go back there, you know, just to run around just a little tap bit for the linebackers and defensive backs to be able to hold up their coverages. And with this, it's going to be a good challenge. It's a good challenge that actually keeps coaches on their toes and also the players that actually is going to sit there and study film. They can sit here and watch, look at some of the quarterbacks they played in the past, you know, look at a Devin Gardner, you know, a guy that he's a pass first quarterback, but he can actually beat you with his feet. And then you can just look at a pocket quarterback. So I think it's one of those deals that actually makes the Hawks sit there and study quite a bit here when it comes to the game film and so forth. But, you know, when you're talking about being on the field, this is going to possibly be someone to try to give you a best of both worlds when it comes down to pass and then actually running as a quarterback.
Now, as far as the defense as a whole is concerned, you're looking at LSU's offense here. And obviously, you have the situation at quarterback where they have a true freshman. He's a completely different guy from what you would see with Mettenberger, who's more of a prototypical pocket passer, a guy that runs a pro style. But you look at the talent that he has around him. I mean, I was just looking at some of the stats, you know, before we got together here. LSU's ground game, they have a guy, Jeremy Hill, who is a pretty familiar name because he had a suspension at the very beginning of the season. Or it was a matter that they were wondering if he was going to be suspended or not for that game against TCU, their season opener. You had him and Terrence McGee as the number two back, and they both have compiled a lot of yards on the ground for LSU this season. And then you look at their receiving core, guys like Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry, both of whom have 1,000 yards receiving. You can maybe argue are as good a duo of receivers, not just in the SEC, but in the entire country. Just knowing what LSU has at its disposal, if you were to make a guess as to what you feel Iowa's game plan is going to be defensively, how do you feel they're going to try and limit what LSU wants to do?
I think when it comes to it, with, you know, a first-year quarterback, you're going to sit there and just try to make him beat you. And the question is, do we want him to beat us with his arm? Do we want him to beat us with his legs? I think when it's all said and done, I think when it comes to it, Iowa's going to stop the run. That's the biggest thing. Iowa has always, you know, put a lot of effort in stopping the run. And, you know, most younger quarterbacks, what is their best friend? A running back. You know, they hand off the running back to open up the game for him, for a quarterback to actually be able to pass the ball. So I look for Iowa to stop the run, and then, you know, we'll sit there and try to get a good feel, hopefully adjust in the second half if there's any a lot of adjustments when it comes to the second half of the game. But I just look for those guys to get after the quarterback and possibly get after him early to be able to rattle him, to actually have him really thinking about what's next for himself other than what's the next play, and give him a lot to think about.
Yeah, and I think both of your points there are pretty valid here, especially just considering the things that I was reading up on and just trying to get acclimated with what LSU is about. The couple of things that stood out to me, one, when you mentioned the fact that you have a guy like Anthony Jennings as their quarterback, I almost feel like a similar game plan to what they did against Nebraska would probably prove beneficial here, because LSU is probably a better team than Nebraska, but there's a similar mold in the sense that what they were going up against is a quarterback that it was a backup, was inexperienced. And then you had a running back like Amir Abdullah, who's obviously a big-time player, much like Jeremy Hill is. Then you look at the receiving corps that the Huskers had, you know, guys like Quincy Enunwa and Kenny Bell. I'm not going to sit here and say that they're as good as Beckham and Landry, but it just to kind of give an idea, I almost feel like Iowa might be better off trying to implement a similar game plan to what they had against Nebraska, which is blitzing pretty frequently and just continuing to apply pressure, like you said, directed at Jennings, much like they were able to do to Kellogg, because I think it reached a point where they were able to have him rattled. And in essence, what I think that could do is limit the production LSU gets through the air, but also limit what they want to do on the ground. Because the other point I want to just make here is when I was studying LSU's run to pass ratio, they're about a 60-40 team, and they average about 65 plays a game. So when you do a rough estimate, they run the ball about 39 times. Every time that they ran the ball at least 39 times this season, they won. The three games that they lost this season to Georgia, Ole Miss, and Alabama, they were held under that average on all three occasions, just for number of carries. So I agree with what you're saying here. I feel like it's going to be something where they have to obviously be able to get pressure on Jennings early and often, but also at the same time be able to limit what LSU is able to do in the running game, because I almost feel like their mode of attack is going to be to run the ball early and often and try and wear out Iowa's defense as the game progresses.
Like that, you know, when you said to there had that magic number of carries, it actually, just like you say, it actually wears down the defensive line, possibly the linebackers. And when you have the defensive line falling back into the linebacker's arm, that's basically when you sit there saying, all right, we're on our heels here, and we don't know what's coming next, because they have the running game down pack, and now they have a choice of what they want to do, you know, possible in a second down situation or a third down situation. So you just just don't want to be sitting there guessing quite a bit, you know, as the game go on, if you're an Iowa team.
And another thing, too, I feel like this is, again, where you have to go back to a concern being the big plays. Because they did a better job guarding against that as the season went on. But considering the type of receivers LSU has, the last thing you want is either of those guys being able to get by your secondary and having an open field to work with.
I was going to say, with LSU's receivers that they have this year, these are guys that I've seen here, you know, quite a bit earlier in the season where these guys actually stretch the field quite a bit. Beckham is a very dangerous receiver, in which I think he improved quite a bit this year. He took his game to the next level, in which I think he can actually take it to the next level next year. But I just feel that he's a leader of their receiving core. He's a guy that, you know, takes a lot of pride, and that he is their playmaker that they have. Not to say that he's not the only 1,000-yard receiver. But they have another one. So it's just one of those deals. You just can't key on one guy. It's just one of those deals where, you know, the Hawks, the secondary just have to be ready to go here this bowl season.
And another thing I was just thinking about, too, when you look at LSU's ground attack, just seeing some video footage of Jeremy Hill, I got to say the one name that immediately entered my mind was Carlos Hyde, because I feel like he's built like him, but he also has that deceptive sort of speed where if he is able to find a crease and he's able to get through it and have open field, he could turn on the Jets. And then just kind of switching now, looking at Iowa's offense here, which obviously got better because, you know, they were able to get some big plays going against Michigan in the second half of that game, their comeback win. And then they were able to put up 38 points against Nebraska in that last game back on Black Friday. You see them going up against an LSU defense clearly it's not the same group that it was, say, a year ago or 2 years ago. When their secondary is absolutely littered with NFL talent, you can maybe even argue their entire defense was. But nevertheless, I feel like they're a group that's obviously gotten better. They shut down Johnny Manziel when they played Texas A&M. But when you see what LSU has defensively and then what you know Iowa's going to want to do offensively, what do you see kind of being the keys for the Hawkeyes here as far as being able to move the ball effectively against LSU's defense?
Regardless of the fact, Iowa has always, you know, have to sit there and say, hey, we have to be able to run the ball, regardless of what it is. Regardless if LSU is going to stop the run, but you got to continue to run that ball. That's one thing about the Hawks that they will do is try to run the ball. And that's the only way, for the most part, we'll be able to get our pass game going because we've never been a pass-first team. So I just really feel that they're going to have to attack early, you know, with the run and mix it up quite a bit. I think it's just mainly mixing it up, trying to keep LSU from saying, okay, this is an obvious run play, this is an obvious pass play. Be able to mix it up, you know, get the three deep with the running backs, you know, put one in the slot and just try to give them different looks to be able to sit there and say, okay, we don't know what's coming. And then just like you always brought up since the Ohio State game, you bring 31 personnel and so forth.
Right, and actually I had two questions I wanted to ask you here. One is, how often do you see Iowa going with the three tight end look? And two, how much of this game do you feel comes down to what Jake Rudock's able to do? And not just maybe in terms of number of yards he throws for, but in terms of accuracy, being able to hit open guys, being able to find, you know, not just get tight ends involved, but also get the receivers, get them involved and have them be able to make plays like they were starting too late in the year.
I would say this game is more than likely going to be one of those possible low-scoring games unless both teams are sitting there clicking, because I think this game is going to be more of a chess game. Quite a bit of a chess game, because I was just trying to sit there and figure out how can they attack LSU's defense and how can they be successful, you know, throughout the duration, through the whole game and so forth. So my thing is just that keeping them off balance and so forth with Jake Rudock, it's a possibility that he's going to have to really, you know, put some work into a lot of study and try to figure out what coverages LSU possibly, you know, break cover, kind of do bad on their coverages and so forth, and how can it get them in a bad situation when it comes down to it, personnel-wise, or either just, you know, you're trying to put a running back on one of their linebackers or so forth. And knowing that we have both two running backs, not just both, but two running backs out of the three that we have that's capable to be able to make a play out there in the open field possibly. So with Jake Rudock, I think I just feel that with him, it's just getting a good feel of the game. You know, once you get a good feel of the game and get a good rhythm, he'll be able to sit out there and throw some darts to his receivers and whoever else is, you know, to the tight end. I think I actually feel this game will possibly be a tight end's game, depending on how effective we are.
Yeah, and I would just say two along those lines. One, going back to our ground game here, I feel like the key is going to be another number I noticed here at LSU is the games that they lost this season, all three teams that they lost to were able to pick up at least 130 yards rushing. So I feel like, again, that's kind of a magic number, if you will. Now, if it's one guy getting the bulk of that, or maybe you're able to even it out between guys like Weissman and Kanterian, possibly even Bullock, they got to find a way to be able to get going, something going on the ground, like you're saying. But I think going back to what I was asking about Rudock, I feel like the accuracy thing is going to be important here. Because, you know, when you look at when they lost to Alabama, Alabama only threw the ball 20 times, but A.J. McCarron completed 14 of those passes. You see when they lost to LSU, yeah, Bo Wallace threw three interceptions in that game, but he also completed 31 passes out of 41. And then, you know, they lost to Georgia. Aaron Murray was just 20 of 34, but hey, he's Aaron Murray, and I think he threw like three or four touchdown passes in that game, maybe even more. I have to go back and check. But nevertheless, that was a shootout. It seems like the games where LSU lost, teams were able to get points on them. And in the case of a team like Alabama, they were able to seize momentum in the second half.
Yes, I was getting ready to say, it's just one of those deals where, of course, Iowa has the, I think personally that Iowa has the receivers. It's just that the receivers just have to step up. And they're going against a defensive secondary that they possibly won't. They haven't seen this year. You know, Ohio State even the secondary has been banged up quite a bit this year. Michigan State has a really good one, but when it comes to being physical out there with those receivers, I'm sure LSU is probably up there with the Michigan States of the world, but they're going to be really physical with those guys, and that's where they're going to sit there and challenge those guys at receivers. So with Jake Rudock, he's going to have to find some kind of way to figure out and ask those receivers, what are you getting? Are you getting the fresh coverage? Are these guys being too physical? What is it going, you know, what is going right? What's going wrong? What's going to work for us? You know, what can we find out that we can get some kind of advantage to get upon LSU? Because LSU is going to bring everything that they have this time around.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as the coaching matchup is concerned, I see this kind of fascinating, not necessarily because I think Les Miles is different from Kirk Ferentz. Obviously, he acts differently with the press and whatnot, but the thing that strikes me is the similarities between clock management, because I know that's something that I've noticed a lot of people be very critical about with Ferentz over the years, but you also see people being very critical with Les Miles about it, especially, you know, down the stretch of fourth quarters. We've seen games where LSU's kind of come out of nowhere and be able to pull off something ridiculous because maybe they caught a team off guard by not calling a timeout, or, you know, just they completed a big play late in the game, or just whatever, just things that seem unorthodox, they've found ways to have success with, and obviously Iowa's been able to do that as well. How do you mentioned before that you see this game kind of being a chess match. Do you think that that's just symbolic of what these two coaches bring, or do you think there's something more to it?
I think it's something that both of the coaches bring. Just like you say, with Les Miles calling the Mad Hatter, as we all know, it's just one of those deals where he can possibly be sitting there run, you know, and possibly run at a fast pace, you know. Is it a no-huddle in which we don't see much of LSU because they're very traditional, just like the Iowa team, you know, come out of the huddle and, you know, get things going. But we don't know. We possibly don't know for this game just because we have a different quarterback. So we can see a different tempo, but just like we both agree, it's just that both coaches are going to sit there and look and sit on the ball, possibly run the ball, pass the ball, you know, run the ball, whatever it is to get a good feel. And then at some point, either team going to make their run and attack the opposing on defense and put their will against them, and possibly sit there and say, okay, we found our weakness, and this is where we're going to go to take us to the promised land and win this game.
Now, the final thing I want to touch on with you here before we get into the bowl games on our pick 'em. If Iowa is able to win this game against LSU, how much of a springboard do you feel this can be for them going into 2014, especially when you consider now the news that broke last week about Brandon Scherff announcing that he was going to come back for his senior year and instead of declaring for the NFL early? You know that you're going to have your left tackle back. And really, you look at the guys that they're going to have returning. Yeah, they lose the three linebackers on the defensive side of the ball, but they bring back a majority of both sides, or a majority of the players on both sides of the football, and could have a very veteran team, and with a schedule that appears somewhat favorable, could have a pretty decent season again next year. So how much of a springboard do you feel being able to beat a team like LSU could be going into next year?
Be a huge springboard. Not only would it be a springboard, it looks like the Hawks are possibly finishing the top 25, depending on how things shake out or so, because that'll be a huge win. You know, it'd be two in a row against LSU. It's one of those defining moments for the Big Ten against the SEC, where the Hawkeyes beat one of the premier teams from the SEC, and sitting there saying the Big Ten is not relevant or anything. So I think it'll be a huge deal. You know, of course, it's a possibility that recruits are on the line. You know, some of the guys that don't know if they want to be a Hawk or not. Also, a huge springboard for spring ball, for guys to go in there and compete. Some of the guys that are coming back, you know, that played a huge role in a special teams or backups or so on. It just gives them something to really feel good about. And also, going into that summer program, you feel good about yourself. The coach is feeling good. They get into a preseason group and unfold their schedule. And next thing you know, those guys are starting to move, just coming off, you know, these really good wins, actually. You know, you beat a Michigan and a Nebraska, and then you beat a LSU. You sit there and say, okay, this team is really looking good, and they look pretty good going into next year.
Yeah, and then you factor in as well the fact that you're going to have the divisions realigning with Maryland and Rutgers joining the Big Ten. It's going to be East-West, and you look at the teams that are going to be in Iowa's division. It's going to be you're not going to have Michigan State or Ohio State, the two teams that just played the Big Ten championship game, but you're going to have Wisconsin, Wisconsin beat Iowa this year, but they're going to be losing a lot. You look at Nebraska. Iowa just beat Nebraska rather handily in Lincoln, no less. Minnesota, another team that Iowa had success against. Northwestern's coming off of a down year. Maybe they resurge next year. We'll see. But then you also have Illinois and Purdue. I think the way it's setting up, it could be very favorable for Iowa. And I'm going to be curious to see if they are able to win this game, just how much success can be carried over from playing on New Year's Day against a team like LSU. So it's going to be fascinating to see how all that unfolds. And we don't have a guest here this week, Chris, but we are going to jump straight into the pick 'em. Normally, in the past, we've done a thing where we had just all 35 games, but because we've had some issues here, I was dealing with myself here the past week, we're only going to do 10 games that we're going to discuss. We're just going to limit it to the Big Ten and the BCS games that are going to be going on. So those are the games that are going to be listed on the pick 'em here. And just a reminder to all of you, you can participate in it. Just when you go to HawkeyeDrive.com, you'll see at the top where it says 24 Heisman Road. If you hover over that, click on the pick 'em page that will appear, and then you'll have the list of 10 games there. Just email them to HawkeyeDrive@gmail.com. Remember to include a score with that Iowa-LSU prediction, because the prize that I'm going to be giving to our winner for this is going to be something I'm going to get down in Tampa, whether it's just a media gift or maybe just some sort of souvenir I find while I'm down there covering the game. That's what it's going to be. It's going to be something pretty commemorative like that. So I encourage all of you out there who are listening to participate, maybe get some of your friends participate as well. And without further ado, I guess we'll just jump right into this here. By the way, I should mention Rob Brown, a guy who's won a few of these here this season, won the pick 'em here during championship weekend. Rob, prize is on its way. And as far as the season goes, Chris, you to this point, you got a record of 95-55. I'm 98-52. So we're kind of neck and neck here going into this bowl pick'em. But you had a pretty strong ending to the season here to catch up to me. I was ahead of you for a while there. But those are the season standings for those that were curious. And we'll start here by discussing the first Big Ten Bowl that's going to be taking place on December 27th, which is the deadline for our pick'em, by the way, is Minnesota going down to the Texas Bowl for the second year in a row. They're sitting there 8-4, except this time around they're taking on Syracuse. Big 12 normally is a tie-in with this game, but they didn't have enough teams to get to this point since they got two teams in the BCS. The spot opened up for the Orange, who became bowl eligible by beating Boston College at the end of the season. So they're the team that's down here. Do you think Minnesota is able to win this time around after losing to Texas Tech a year ago and finish the season with a 9-4 record, or do you think Syracuse takes advantage of this opportunity they're getting to play in a game like this?
I think Minnesota is actually going to win this game and to go to 9 wins this season. It's just one of those deals where this season has been very remarkable for Minnesota. Of course, we for the most part overlook what Minnesota has done because of the Hawks have actually beat them. But you know, just going through what Minnesota has gone through with their coach, you know, with his illnesses and everything, they have a very remarkable season. I think 9 wins will look really good on their resume going into next year. Just like, you know, if the Hawks actually get to a 9th win, that you'd feel pretty good going into the off season and going into the summertime with that.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you on Minnesota winning this game. And I think it basically comes down to this for me. First of all, these teams have actually played each other a few times in recent memory, including last season. Minnesota actually beat Syracuse. I know the Orange have a new head coach now, but nevertheless, they're still pretty similar in what they do. The other thing, too, is Syracuse actually played a couple Big Ten teams earlier this season. They lost to Penn State and Northwestern. Those are two teams that Minnesota beat during conference play. So you factored that in, plus the fact that, as I mentioned, Minnesota was in this game a year ago against Texas Tech, put up quite a fight there, actually. They're probably disappointed about being there 2 years in a row, but at the same time, they're familiar with the surroundings. They could probably put together a pretty similar routine to what they had a year ago, and I think this time around it's probably going to have more success. So I'm with you here. I think the Gophers are definitely going to be a team that everyone's going to look at in the Big Ten and say, well, you know what, they were a bright spot during bowl season. Now moving on to a game being played December 28th. This used to be called the Insight Bowl back when Iowa was playing in it regularly. Now it's called the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl. And you got a pair of 7-5 teams here with Michigan, a team that they put up quite a performance against Ohio State but weren't able to win that game against the Buckeyes back on Thanksgiving weekend. And they're taking on a Kansas State team that got to this point by winning 5 of their last 6 games. To me, I almost look at this matchup, Chris, and I feel like it's a matter of which Michigan shows up. Because if it's the Michigan that played against Ohio State, then I think that they have a pretty good shot at winning, because that was a game you could tell they were revved up for, and they gave it their all, and it showed. They basically threw everything at Ohio State that was in their playbook, and they had some success. But I also feel like if you see the Michigan team that you saw throughout the month of November leading up to that game, to me, that would, I would think, would maybe play to Kansas State's advantage. What's your take on this game?
I'm going to go with Michigan. And the reason why I'm going with Michigan is just off of the Ohio State game and just looking at how Michigan plays, you know, with their bigger wins in the season, in which you feel good about them, but then you have a win when they just barely beat an Akron. You sit there and you scratch your head, and, you know, the loss to Iowa. And you continue to sit there and scratch your head about a Michigan team, but it's just one of those deals where I think with Michigan, just like you said, you don't know who's going to show up, but I really think that Brady Hope had these guys ready to play here in this bowl game and to be able to sit there and really think about how their season could have been all the way up here compared to all the way down there for the most part this year. So I'm going with Michigan this week.
I'm going to disagree. I have a feeling you're going to see that Michigan team that was struggling there for most of November in this game, and I think Kansas State's going to win. And I think this might be an example of a game where it's a matter of which team's more interested. Because with Michigan coming off of a 7-5 season, I'm curious to just how interested this team's going to be playing on a late Saturday night like this and out all the way in Arizona. We're probably not going to have a whole lot of fans making the trip from Ann Arbor to Tempe for this game. Whereas Kansas State, you know, they had a struggle. They struggled early in the season, and they had that loss to North Dakota State, but they caught fire during Big 12 play. They won a couple of key games late in the year. They had some momentum, and you know their fans are going to travel. They played in the Fiesta Bowl last year, and they won the Big 12. And Bill Snyder's a guy I feel like is very similar to Kirk Ferentz in the sense that I feel he's going to have his team prepared to play in this game and have them prepared for what they're going to be going up against. And I just feel like, I don't know, to me, I just feel Michigan, what you saw against Ohio State was maybe more of an aberration than something that could be trending upward for them. I will say, I think for Michigan, though, this could be a very important game for them going forward, because when you look at, I mentioned the Big Ten divisions realigning, next year you're going to be seeing them in a division that they're sharing with Michigan State and Ohio State, and possibly, I know Penn State won't be eligible, but they're going to be a team that continues, as long as Bill O'Brien's there, they're going to continue to be a team that hovers around there and can make noise in conference play. You wonder just how much Michigan's going to be able to do going forward, especially if they're not able to win this game later in the month. I just get the feeling that Kansas State's going to prevail here. And then moving on now to the games in January. On New Year's Day, we'll start with the Gator Bowl, which is starting about an hour before Iowa takes on LSU. And this is a rematch of last year's Capital One Bowl. You got Nebraska, 8-4. Obviously, they lost that game to Iowa to end the season, and they're taking on Georgia, ranked 23rd in the country. The interesting thing here is neither team has their starting quarterback. Nebraska's played most of the season without Taylor Martinez, and then Georgia lost Aaron Murray late in the year to a season-ending knee injury, and they're going with their backup. This game being played down in Jacksonville, I'm curious to see what both team psyches are here just because they just played each other a year ago. I don't know how excited anybody is about this game in general, but I feel like what's going to play to Georgia's advantage is the fact that this game's being played very close to where their campus is located. Plus, they play in the stadium every year anyway when they play Florida. So it's a trip that I know their fans are probably going to have no trouble making. And it's going to just basically feel like a true road game for Nebraska. And again, I think it goes back to the interest. And just how is this team going to respond after the way they looked against the Hawkeyes, where they not only got beat, but they had Bo Pelini having the tirade that he had both during the game with the officials and then afterwards just basically begging to be fired, but ending up getting the AD's vote of confidence there afterwards and him still being aboard. I just feel like Nebraska's kind of a mess right now, and I think Georgia, even with a backup quarterback, is going to be able to take advantage of it.
I agree with you. I'm one with Georgia. I think Georgia is just, like you say, we're both teams, period. It's just who's interested in playing the game? Who wants it more? You know, that's what it comes down to. Of course, Aaron Murray, you know, a great kid that, you know, had sustained a knee injury in which, you know, you feel bad for him and so forth. But I really feel that with Georgia and the talent that they have, that they actually beat a Nebraska team this time around, and that's what I'm going with. Going with Georgia this time, I just feel that Nebraska just, without Taylor Martinez, but I just think that Georgia is an actual better talented team overall-wise as well.
Right, and should mention Georgia won that game last year against Nebraska, but that was with Aaron Murray playing for the Dogs and Taylor Martinez playing for the Huskers, even without both quarterbacks. I feel like this is a game where Georgia still has more talent, and it's going to be the difference here. So we agree on the Bulldogs winning. Now you look at the Capital One Bowl also being played on New Year's Day. And it's another Big Ten SEC battle. You have Wisconsin ranked 19th in the country. This is after losing that game to Penn State and missing out on a BCS game. They're going to take on a South Carolina team that went 10-2, ranked 8th in the country. Probably should be a BCS team, but because of the rule where you can only have two teams per conference, they're in this game instead, and they benefited from Missouri losing the SEC title game, especially when you consider the head-to-head. To me, I look at this, I feel like this might actually be one of the best bowl games that you have, because in Vegas it's considered a pick'em, and I could really see this going either way. Do you think this is one where the Badgers, you know, give the Big Ten a victory that they'll need, or do you feel that the old ball coach in South Carolina are going to be able to get it done and get to a third straight season with 11 victories?
Just like you said, I actually feel that Wisconsin has a very good chance of winning this game, and the reason why I feel that they have the best chance of winning this game is because they run the ball, and when they run the ball, they run the ball very effective. And I also have a very good receiving core, you know, with Jerry Aberdare is actually a guy that can go out there and, you know, take on the show and give you a show for the most part. With their defense, it's a very stout 3-4 defense that gets the job done. With South Carolina, they have a very good running back in Mike Davis, and also they have Connor Shaw at the quarterback. And also you have the supposed Heisman trophy guy that you had this past year winning, Jadeveon Clowney,
yeah.
A guy that in which we all know is a very talented guy that actually leads this defense, in which I think the defense just don't have enough actually this year to actually stop that running game that Wisconsin likes to sit there and just stuff the ball and dive straight down your throat.
I'm going to disagree. I think South Carolina wins because, and then look, as I said, I think this is a game that's probably going to go down to the wire, and I think Wisconsin does have a good chance of winning, but the reason I'm going with the Gamecocks here is you mentioned Jadeveon Clowney, and yes, he was a guy at the beginning of the season I thought could win the Heisman Trophy. Didn't end up happening, obviously, but with this more than likely being his last game, he could theoretically come back for a senior year, but let's face it, he's not going to. This is going to be his last game at South Carolina. I think he's going to go out with a chip on his shoulder and with something to prove. So I think he's going to go out there and have a big game. The one thing that I think he could have trouble with, though, is if he's not a factor early on, considering the size of Wisconsin's offensive line, he might end up being a complete non-factor over the course of the game, because that's something he's going to have to get adjusted to. I don't know how many times he sees an offensive line that's collectively 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", and all weighing 300-plus pounds. But I look at South Carolina as well on the offensive side of the ball. You mentioned Connor Shaw. I feel like he's a guy that late in the game can make the plays that I don't feel Joel Stave can make for Wisconsin. And I think that's what it ultimately boils down to. I think he's a guy that's going to end up making some key plays late for the Gamecocks here. And I just feel that they're going to come out of this game with a victory. I think Wisconsin will play them close. It might even end up being like a one-point game. But I just feel South Carolina is a slightly better team, and they're going to end up prevailing here. And then jumping into the BCS games, because we'll mention Iowa here at the end. So we'll get into the BCS games, and we'll start off with the granddaddy of them all, the Rose Bowl. It features Michigan State, who won the Big Ten. They're ranked fourth in the country after beating Ohio State in the Big Ten title game earlier this month. They're taking on a Stanford team that's ranked fifth, disposed of Arizona State on the road in the Pac-12 title game. And really, it's kind of fitting that this is the 100th Rose Bowl, because for such an old-fashioned game like this, you see teams that play old school, and they're basically mirror images of each other. Both have tremendously stout defenses. Both are very similar in what they want to do offensively. I would imagine it was difficult for you to pick a winner here, but who do you see prevailing? Do you think that the Cardinal win a second straight Rose Bowl here under David Shaw, or do you think Michigan State caps off what's really just been an unbelievable season for Mark D'Antonio and his team?
Just like you said, it's just one of those deals where these are two teams that's for the most part a very mirror image of each other, and you sit there and say, oh, man, it's going to be some power football, a stout defensive game, possibly a very close game when it comes to scoring. I'm going with Michigan State, and the reason why I'm going with Michigan State is just because of their defense and what they've shown to me versus Ohio State, in which we know that Ohio State defense was their Achilles heel there. But one thing I like about Stanford is just them running the power, and I actually feel that Michigan State has that defense that can actually stop the power and the physicality that Stanford has. But one thing that Stanford has to do is actually pass the ball, because this is one of those deals that both of these teams know each other so well. It's just that I feel that Michigan State offense will just get the job done a little bit more, just because of their defense is so daggone good. I just feel that Michigan State's offense is better than Stanford's defense when it comes down to it, when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you here. I think Michigan State wins a very close game. And I would mention, too, special teams maybe coming into play here as well, because obviously we know Mark D'Antonio is capable of having a trick up his sleeve. But even beyond that, we've seen Mike Sadler, and yeah, he had that fake punt against Iowa, but it turns out the guy's a pretty good punter. You can maybe even argue he's as good as a punter as there is in the country. Conversely, Stanford has a really good return guy in Ty Montgomery, so I think field position is going to obviously be a huge thing, especially considering how good both of these defenses are, and they're just amazing to watch. But I also think Stanford's going to have a little bit of trouble trying to get anything going through the air because of Michigan State's secondary. You mentioned a guy like Darquise Denard, who won the Jim Thorpe Award for best defensive back, and that's an honor I certainly believe he was deserving of. I just have a feeling Connor Cook, he's a guy that's grown as the season's gone on, and he's going to be able to make some plays late, and I just feel Michigan State's going to be able to win. And then, so I like the Spartans there like you do. And then moving on to the last game being played on New Year's Day, which is the Fiesta Bowl, which is kind of an interesting matchup because you have Central Florida here at 11-1. They basically ended up in this game because Northern Illinois lost. Otherwise, they were probably going to be going to the Sugar Bowl. They're in this game, ranked 15th in the country. They're taking on Baylor, who has an identical 11-1 record. Ended up winning the Big 12 outright, thanks to Oklahoma State losing Bedlam. And then Baylor being able to dispose of Texas in the regular season finale. I look at this matchup. I like UCF. They're a team that I like Blake Bortles. He's a guy that I've been kind of high on this year. But their MO's kind of been being able to hang around and then steal games late, especially late in the season. It seems like that's how they've been able to win a lot of their games. And I just don't think you could do that against a team like Baylor. I just feel like this is a game where Baylor, if it gets out to a big lead early, it could end up being an ugly game. And I just have a feeling that that's probably how it's going to play out when you consider the playmakers that Baylor has, guys like Bryce Petty at quarterback, Lacey Strunk at running back. I think these guys are just going to be able to move the ball up and down the field early and often. And, you know, Central Florida will probably put up some points, but I don't see this game being all that close. I have a feeling Baylor might win in a rout.
Once again, Baylor is just one of those teams where you sit there and look at their offense, it's ridiculous. It's very ridiculous, and they look to continue on with their success that they have so far this year with their offense, their defense. Their defense is a team that still rebounded from the Oklahoma State game that they had. Of course, they won the game against Texas, but at the same time, they're going against a team that, for the most part, they're going to do pretty good with. You have a quarterback is a really good quarterback at UCF, and also they have a running game that they sit there and tote the ball here and there, but at the same time, it's just one of those deals. Like you say, I don't think that UCF is actually built to sit there and be able to go toe-to-toe or either play catch-up against a team like Baylor because they have Baylor start to sit on the ball. They have two really good running backs, so it gets to a point where you're just in a lose-lose situation. But, with UCF being in a BCS game, that they deserve every bit of it. I'm sure they're going to relish every moment and give everything they have.
Right. And to me, I feel like the best chance that UCF has of winning this game is if their defense somehow manages to keep Baylor like in the 20s, and then they can find a way to make some plays late in the fourth quarter. Otherwise, I just feel like if it reaches a point where Baylor's getting close to 30 points and it's still in the second quarter, yeah, UCF doesn't have a chance of winning this game. So we agree on Baylor. Now moving on to a game being played January 2nd, which is the All-State Sugar Bowl. Featuring, I'm going to do my best Keith Jackson impersonation here with Oklahoma and Alabama going toe-to-toe down in New Orleans. The Sooners, obviously, they beat Oklahoma State at the end of the season, cost them a chance at winning the Big 12, and ended up with a 10-2 record getting an at-large bid into this game. They're taking on an Alabama team. Obviously, they're here because Auburn ended up in the national championship. So you have the Sooners and Crimson Tide. I would imagine Oklahoma's probably the more motivated team as far as being down there. They're probably more excited about being down there. But I almost get the feeling that this game could end up being very similar to what you saw back when Florida was in the Sugar Bowl a few years ago against Cincinnati. If you remember, that was Tim Tebow's last game, and he went out basically completing every pass in sight, and Florida basically made it about winning that game for him. I feel like Alabama's motivation here is going to be channeled towards winning this game for A.J. McCarron, who somehow was a Heisman runner-up. I'm still trying to figure that out, but he's a guy that has been a three-year starter for him, won a couple national championships. championships. I don't think they're going to be motivated to not have their season end like it did the last time they were in this game when they lost to Utah. And I just have a feeling Oklahoma's going to struggle moving the football on this Alabama defense, and ultimately that's going to end up being the difference in the Crimson Tide being able to prevail.
I was going to say that. Actually, I was just looking at this game being a tale of the two running backs, you know, T.J. Yeldon and also the phenomenal running back that Oklahoma has that really play. A guy that's been running the ball route for the most part for Oklahoma. But like you said, it just comes down to where you have a team that's very motivated in Oklahoma. And you have a team that's in Alabama is for the most part a national championship game or bust, you know. And you sit there and say, who's more motivated? Who wants it more? I'm going to go with the upset. I'm going with Oklahoma because Oklahoma has been so used to get upset in a BCS game. And Alabama, just one of those deals. They're going to go out there and play, just like you said. They're going to go out there and play for A.J. McCarron and everything there is. But I think that with Oklahoma, this can really take their team to the next level here moving forward and be able to get the Big 12 more respect and so forth moving forward. You know, you can sit there and say, hey, the Big 12 actually has two BCS champions for the most part. Hopefully it ends up like that. So it's just one of those deals where I think Oklahoma has what it takes to actually win this game, even though everyone questioned their quarterback's play. So I'm really looking. I'm just taking that upset so I can be throwing you off.
I figured that you were going to get to that point here. Now we'll move into the Orange Bowl taking place January 3rd, and this is where Ohio State ended up as a result of losing that game to Michigan State and missing out on playing for a national championship. They're in this game against Clemson, who was picked to replace Florida State on the ACC side. So you have Ohio State against Clemson here. The Tigers are ranked 12th. The Buckeyes are ranked 7th. Again, I feel like this is maybe another question of who ends up being more motivated, and I think that this is a theme that you have most of the time with bowl games. Do you think Ohio State's going to be motivated enough to want to go down there and play a game like this against a team like Clemson, or do you think Clemson might be able to have a strong ending to this season and maybe undo everything that went wrong for it 2 years ago when they played West Virginia in this game?
Any team that's not, you know, that's possibly not motivated to go to any bowl game this season, I think it'd be Ohio State. And, you know, what they have went through all season long, being undefeated, you know, they don't have the resume, they don't have the schedule strength, and all this good stuff, and then they lose the Big 10 championship game. You're talking about motivation, you know. Urban Meyer can't deal with losses, and, you know, it's just one of those deals with Ohio State that they can find themselves on the same side as what Clemson was on, you know, a beatdown, just like you said, for the most part. It probably more than likely wouldn't be the same score, but I can actually see a beatdown that's happening to Ohio State if they're not prepared for the most part, because Clemson has a very prolific offense where if Sammy Watkins get off, or and Tyus Boyd is in rhythm, you can see a very interesting game from the Clemson side. But if the game turns into the shootout, it can actually go Clemson way. But I'm going Ohio State. I want to see Urban Meyer's his adjustment. You know, I know they put a lot of energy into the season, a lot of energy into that championship game. But now it's time to bounce back and get back to business and move forward going into next year. So I'm going to Ohio State and see what Brandon Miller what he's really about now when it's time to bounce back. Will Carlos Hyde be able to get off like he has been the last month and some change? Well, actually, since he's been back for the most part. So I'm looking for Carlos Hyde to actually have a huge game this game as if he had the last, for the most part, the whole year.
I'm going to agree with you on Ohio State winning this game. I just want to say a couple things. One, if it does, I don't see either team getting anywhere near 70 points. If Ohio State did end up on a beatdown like that, like Clemson did 2 years ago, that would be just talked about for the entire year. They would just be getting absolutely slaughtered in the media for months if that were to happen. But I think to that same point, I do think Clemson's going to obviously be motivated for that reason, and they're not gonna, they're gonna probably be more focused and not want to get embarrassed in this game. But I'm gonna disagree with one thing that you said about the motivation factor here with Ohio State, and there's two reasons that I would say. One, I think the fact that they weren't in a bowl game last year when they went undefeated, I think they're going to be excited about the opportunity that they get an extra game here. I think they're probably they're not going to take this for granted like maybe they would have in years past. And the second thing, too, Urban Meyer, when he has time to prepare, like he's going to have a month to prepare for this game against Clemson, it's almost impossible to beat a team of his in that sort of situation. I think really the only time I can recall that ever happening where he lost a bowl game was when he was at Florida. They lost to Michigan the year Tebow won the Heisman Trophy. But I don't see that happening here. I think Ohio State wins. But I'm going to also point to the defensive side of the ball because I look at a guy like Ryan Shazier who, with all due respect to Chris Borland, who's a great linebacker, to me Ryan Shazier should have been the defensive player of the year in the Big Ten. I thought he was the best linebacker in the conference. And as far as he goes, this is a homecoming for him because he's originally from Fort Lauderdale. So the chance to play in front of his home crowd, I think he's going to want to put on a quality performance here. And I just feel the Buckeyes are going to be able to regroup because I think Urban will press the right buttons with this team. And I expect it to be a competitive game, a game that maybe goes deep into the fourth quarter. But at the end of the day, I just feel Ohio State's going to prevail.
I was going to add on to this. It's the possibility that Ryan say they're playing his last game at home, basically.
That's another good point, too. Now you get into the other game being played in Pasadena on January 6th, which is the BCS National Championship game, the last one of these before there's a playoff next year. And you have an undefeated Florida State team, ranked number one in the country, obviously, as Jameis Winston just won the Heisman Trophy this past weekend, taking on Auburn. Auburn benefited from Ohio State losing, and they won the SEC Championship game, so they're 12-1. They're ranked second. Their one loss is that LSU team Iowa's playing in the Outback Bowl, by the way. But this is your national championship game. And the interesting thing here is Jimbo Fisher actually was an Auburn assistant at one point in time. And Jameis Winston is from the state of Alabama. So there's plenty of storylines in play here. But this game, does Florida State cap off the undefeated season here? Or does the SEC make it 8 straight?
I'm going with famous Jameis and his offense that he has had. I just don't see no weakness in that team this year. It's just one of those deals where even on James Winston's team where he had a so-so game against a team that's not as challengeable, in which for the most part, like a lot of people said in the first half, he was putting up a lot of good numbers, but then it, you know, he finished the game with, you know, for the most part, average numbers where most quarterbacks would have, you know, throughout the game and so forth. Second half, just for the most part, shutting him down and taking him out of the game, or either just him just still trying to figure out some rhythm and keep away from being rusty so far. But I think Florida State's defense is probably going to be the best defense when it comes to pass rushing, in which Auburn don't really do a lot. And what they do is, you know, it's pretty effective because of the run game and how effective it's been so far. But it just comes down to Florida State linebackers playing a lot of time in ball, and it's just one of those deals where I actually see them, for the most part, just manhandling Auburn in this game. And I think that they're going to win by at least 14 points. It's a lot. You know, I think it's a lot when it comes to a national championship, but I think they're going to run away with the 14 points, not just, okay, you know, at the end of the game, you know, desperation happens. But I actually think Florida State would actually win this game.
I agree with you on Florida State winning, but I think it's going to maybe be more of a shootout here. I'm going to say something along the lines of like a 41-28 final. It basically what I feel is I think Auburn will have some success against Florida State's defense being able to run the football, but I'm placing a major emphasis on some success because I feel the Seminoles will be able to adjust. And if it gets to a point where Auburn's playing from behind, I think they're going to struggle being able to throw the football. And that's where I see guys like LaMarcus Joyner being able to make plays in the second secondary, maybe a guy like Tim Jernigan, you know, being able to apply pressure onto Nick Marshall. As far as the other side of the ball here, I don't think Auburn's defense is going to be able to do much at all here, and not just because of Winston, but you consider the offensive line he's working with, you consider the playmakers he's working with, a guy like Kelvin Benjamin, who's one of the top receivers in the ACC, a guy like Nick O'Leary, a tight end. I think he's just going to be able to distribute the ball at will. Obviously, you have the question mark of, okay, with all the Heisman stuff that he's going through right now, is it going to be enough of a distraction where maybe he struggles in this game? And just from what I've seen from him this season, I just don't see that being the case. Now, do I think he's going to be off the charts here? Not necessarily, but I think it's going to be a game where he's going to be able to make enough plays, and Florida State's going to be able to make enough plays where they're going to score some points, and it's going to reach a point where Auburn's going to fall behind and they're not going to be able to play catch up. And at the end of the day, it's been an amazing season for Auburn, obviously, with the thrilling victories they had against Georgia and Alabama. And Gus Malzahn, he was my pick to win the Coach of the Year when I filled out the Eddie Robinson award ballot I had. He just recently won that award earlier this week. Auburn's deserving of all the praise it's gotten, but I just feel Florida State's a better team, and it's going to show here. And I think this, I agree with you. I think the Seminoles are going to be the team that is hoisting that crystal ball at the end of the night on January 6th there in Pasadena. So we agree on Florida State. And now, finally, the Outback Bowl. Iowa, LSU, Tigers are ranked 14th in the country. This game's being played at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, New Year's Day. If you're going to the game, it's a 1 p.m. Eastern kickoff. If you're watching it on TV here in Iowa, it's at noon on ESPN. You have Mike Tirico and John Gruden. So, yeah, I'm sure you're going to hear a lot about Brandon Scherff being a grinder, or, you know, maybe Iowa pulling a Spider 2-Y banana with Adam Cox, you know, down near the goal line. I'm sure Gruden's going to have a lot of fun with this one, but how do you see this playing out? Do you think the Hawkeyes cap off the season with another Outback Bowl victory and continue those parallels to your junior year in 2008? Or do you feel LSU is just going to be end up being too stiff of a test for this team to be able to beat?
I think when it comes to this game, it just comes down to time possession, carries, for the most part, just like you say, and also it comes down to being able to take that initial blow. What I mean, when I say the initial blow, is just one of those deals with Iowa. Can they take that initial blow, regardless if it's a big run from LSU or a pass play? Can they recover from it, you know, in the next couple series? It's not so much the next series, but the next couple series, and being able to regain the stability and so forth with LSU. Will it be one of those deals that it becomes a domino effect? It becomes to the point where it's late in the game and the Mad Hatter is starting to sit there and think, I'm running out of time, and they really know that it's a possibility that I'm going to gamble instead of him taking a gamble early in the game, in which I think he's going to gamble in this game. For a fact, I really feel that he's going to gamble in the game, and of course, I'm sure Coach Ferentz shall be ready. I say shall be ready and put emphasis on that because he's a Mad Hatter for some reason. And so when I look at this game, and I'm picking the Hawks to win because it's one of those deals, just like we talked about earlier in the podcast, in which Iowa can really have a leapfrog in their season going into next year. We're talking about next year and also the success that we had from this season, you know, going towards the end of the season, in which Coach Ferentz always talk about winning in November. You know, of course, you win in October and you try to get some momentum and going in November, but we have quite a bit of momentum in which we beat a stumbling Michigan team, in which we thought that was going to be a pretty good team by the time we played them, and both of us have said, uh-oh, we don't know if the Hawks is going to get six wins when it comes to a Michigan game, you know, and the same thing with the Nebraska, in which these guys finished up with winning 8 games. And so I really look for us to actually be able to establish the run, pass the ball when we need to. And actually, I really feel that our quarterback, Jake Rudolph, will make a play and actually finish off the game in which the Hawkeyes win and go into a very good 2014 campaign looking good and feeling good about themselves.
I'm going to take the upset as well and agree with you. I think Iowa does win this game. And I'm going to throw on a kind of deceptive final score here, but hear me out. I'm going to say Iowa wins 28-17. And I'm going to throw on there that Christian Kirksey gets a pick six late in the game that makes it a two-possession game. I think it's going to be one of those games where LSU's in a position to maybe drive late, but then Iowa's defense comes up with a big play and, you know, creates a little more separation. But I'll just preface this by saying that I'm picking Iowa. If Mettenberger had not gotten hurt against Arkansas and he was playing in this game instead of Anthony Jennings, I would probably be picking LSU. I'll just be very upfront about that. But the fact that they're throwing a true freshman out there, and yeah, okay, there's not a lot of film on the guy, but at the same time, there wasn't a whole lot of film on Ron Kellogg III either, and he ended up taking every snap from Nebraska. And I go back to that parallel because I feel that is going to be – it's going to be a very similar game plan. I think this is going to be something where they're going to put a lot of pressure on him early, because, and we've talked before about Phil Parker being more aggressive than Norm was. I think he's going to send a lot of blitzes early and often and force him to beat them with his arm, be able to find those guys, you know, on like Beckham and Landry on slants, on those out routes, you know, on those plays where maybe he's only throwing the ball 10 yards, but if they're able to get any sort of separation, they can end up making an explosive play. I think he's going to force them to do a lot of that. And if they can get to him early, which I have a feeling they might be able to, I think they're going to get to him frequently, and I'm not sure he's going to be able to adjust, which is why I feel LSU's probably going to rely more on the run than they typically do, and that's something that Iowa's got to be aware of defensively, just knowing that they can come not just with a guy like Jeremy Hill, but with a guy like Terrence McGee, who has a pretty similar build. It's not like a thing where they have like a Weissman and a Bullock and Kanzeri where they're all kind of different and all bring different things to the table. LSU's backs are all pretty similar for the most part. And I feel Iowa's got to just be ready, you know, for a very physical game, especially the front seven. But I think this is where those three senior linebackers, I think they're all going to want to end their careers on a strong note. They're going to be able to do that. Now, looking at Iowa offensively, I don't know if they're going to have the same type of production against LSU that they had against teams like Nebraska or against Michigan in the second half of that game, but they're going to need those playmakers in the receiving core to step up and make plays, whether it's a guy like a Cavante, you know, who had that big touchdown catch against Nebraska, or a guy like Tavon Smith, who really kind of – he had that big play against Michigan, and that kind of turned the tide in that game. Or maybe it's a guy like Don Shumpert, who started to come on really strong there at the beginning of November and ended up having a pretty decent end to his senior year. And maybe he ends up having a big play here against LSU in this game. But I also feel Rudock's going to be relying a lot on his tight ends. And this is a game where I feel he's got to show some accuracy, because if he struggles throwing the football and Iowa's possessions are short and they got to continue punting to this team, eventually you have a guy like Odell Beckham back there as a returner. He's capable of breaking a big play in the return game and shifting field position, and suddenly that puts more pressure on the defense. So to me, I think it's, like you said, it's going to come down to time of possession and carries. If Iowa's able to move the chains and keep LSU's offense on the sidelines and keep its defense rested, I think it has an excellent chance of winning. And part of me feels like they're going to be able to do that, because the one thing Ferentz has shown that he's capable of is bowl preparation. Outside of the Orange Bowl where they lost to USC, I would argue his teams, for the most part, have been pretty prepared going into bowl games. Even 2 years ago, they played Oklahoma. That defense came to play against the Sooners. They lost that game because they couldn't get anything going offensively. I think this is a situation where the offense is better than it was 2 years ago, and they're going to be in a position where they can make something happen because LSU's defense isn't as good as it was before. So, to me, I think it's a game that's going to probably be low scoring early on, and there's maybe a few big plays late that put Iowa ahead. And then when they're driving, I think they're going to get some pressure on Jennings and a guy like Kirksey, or maybe it's one of the other linebackers, but I'll say it'll be Christian. I think they're going to make a big play late, and it's going to be the difference, and I see Iowa prevailing, much like you do here. Do you have anything to add to that, or is there anything else that you wanted to say?
Well, for the most part, you pretty much summed it up. For the most part, what I can actually touch on is just one of those, just like you said, with those senior linebackers, just, they want to go out with a bang. You know, you got B.J. Lowry, you know, kids like him. You know, he wants to go out with a bang. You know, he's going to get tested pretty good in this game against some pretty good LSU receivers. And, you know, overall, just with the new coaching staff, you know, the new makeup of this coaching staff for the most part, yeah, they finally get their first bowl win, and it'd be one heck of a bowl win for the most part, you know, and it's just one of those deals, just like I say, you feel good about yourself. And with the Hawks, it's just another step. It's just another step to going back to, you know, where Coach Parents had those 2-3 year runs where you're going to have pretty good bowl games, possible, you know, BCS run, being there, being a mix. Be in the mix, you know, with your Ohio State, your Michigan State, and your Michigans and so forth, and Nebraska nowadays, and of course, not to leave out Wisconsin. So, and the Hawks actually won this game, and it actually put them in the picture and sitting there, you know, the dark horses of next year and so forth, and to be able to win the Big Ten, not only their side of their division, but, you know, the whole conference and so forth. But, you know, I mean, that's a tall order right now. But at the same time, it's, you know, this is that step of beating the LSU team in which, just like you say, that for the most part can possibly win our conference.
It's been a fun year, my friend. I'm glad that we've been able to do this now for a third year, and that's going to do it for our final edition this season of the Talking Hawks podcast. Just a reminder to all of you out there that you can become a member of HawkeyeDrive.com. We offer a 3-day free trial to the site, as well as monthly and yearly subscriptions, $9.99 a month, $89.99 a year. Payments are recurring. It gives you access to everything on the site, both free and premium. Also a reminder, if you aren't already, you can follow Chris on Twitter at CRowell34. You can follow me on Twitter at TheBStyles. And you can follow HawkeyeDrive.com on Twitter at Hawkeye Drive. I will be down in Tampa covering this game. I'm leaving on the 28th. I'll start my coverage on the 29th, so we'll have 3 days worth of pregame coverage leading up to the game, and then, of course, coverage of the game itself on New Year's Day between Iowa and LSU. So I hope you all take time that week to check out what I have to offer on the site. Chris, thank you once again for being a co-host on this podcast. It's been great having you along, and Merry Christmas to you, man. I hope you have a good one.
Thank you. I would like to say Merry Christmas to you and also all the podcast listeners here. It's been a great ride, 3 years. Just one of those deals, you sit there, it all started out just sitting there going to the library, meeting for the podcast, a third year being away from each other, a couple states away, and still enjoying each other and sitting here having this podcast. You know, I'd like to say once again, just say thanks to the viewers and happy holidays.
Yeah, and hopefully if we are able to come back with this again next year here, I would obviously like to have you along for the ride again. So we'll see how that all plays out come in August. But in the meantime, hope you all enjoyed listening to our podcast this season. And if you're going down to the game, enjoy yourself down there in Tampa. Have a good time. If you're watching on New Year's Eve, or New Year's Day rather, you know, enjoy watching the game and listening to Mike Tirico and John Gruden there. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to all of you who are listening. And Chris and I will hopefully be back with you again next year to discuss the 2014 version of the Iowa Hawkeyes. Again, check out our coverage on HawkeyeDrive.com of the 2014 Outback Bowl and participate in our pick'em. Whoever wins, you'll get a prize from me from down in Tampa. So be able to check that out. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Brendan, for Chris Rowell, I'm Brendan Styles.